Hi there.
Hi.
I'm Andy Munt, and I'm from Stevens City, although I'm originally from Indianapolis. All of my drinking was done there, except a couple of years in Miami. But we get drunk and sloppy and stupid there, same as you can here. So my home group is women's 12 and 12 on Saturday morning in Winchester. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people and try to stay active because that helps us as a group carry the message to others that are suffering. And I was suffering really badly when I got here. I used to have a home group. And I'm 69 years old, and I've been sober 39 years. So you don't have to go, let's see now, she said, high school, 68, yeah, okay. I used to have a home group that I went to for like 25 years or something in Indianapolis, and we'd always have a qualifier. And so if somebody came to speak, they'd do a little qualifier, we called it, and then they'd have a topic, and we'd end up doing a discussion meeting. But so I want to give you my little qualifier. I grew up in a super nice home. My dad was a coach. He never drank at home. Sometimes if we'd go camping in another state, he would have a beer. And I just didn't grow up around drinking. And in fact, in high school, the guys didn't drink around the girls, and we didn't date anybody that drank, and we certainly didn't drink. And that was just all that was, it was just, we were Pollyanna, Midwest, you know, grown up. And so when I got to college, I didn't drink for the first semester. But the second semester, I started drinking, and it didn't take, the second time I drank, I threw up everywhere, I didn't know where I was, I shouldn't have been where I was, and everything else. So that there was my initiation, and I don't know why I thought, I'll just do this some more. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But I did. And so I was right off the bat drinking like a fool. And so I was going to college, and I somehow able to stay in college until my third year, and then I quit because I just didn't know really what I wanted to do. And I started working as a nurse's aide and a ward secretary in a hospital and really loved that. And so I went to nursing school. And so I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. The biggest thing for me has been learning tools here in AA for me to use when I have troubles or need to act like a sober, responsible person instead of a dramatic, freaking out idiot and have to drink over everything. I used to work a lot with pony club kids and their horses. There's nothing like a 13-year-old and their horse, you know. I mean, I love them to death. But I would say, practice not freaking out. And I would say that to my sponsees, too. Practice not freaking out. Because now we're in a different zone. We are in AA. We have tools. We have love. We have meetings. We have steps. We have all kinds of things to help us get through life. And we don't need to freak out. And you know, I was so self-centered when I came in. I just, of course, I thought it was all about me, and boy, I'm glad I didn't hit anybody when I was driving around drunk, because I might have, something might have happened to me. And you know, I'm so glad I got sober so I can live this life and da-da-da-da-da. But then after I did the steps and did the 12th step and stayed in the program and listened and learned, I really realized that I'm here to do God's will. And I was given sobriety by God, in my opinion, so that I could do His will. And really, nothing's about me. It's all about what God wants me to do. So, but that took a few years, you know, before I got out of totally staring at myself. And, when I was drinking, I would say, I'm just going to go to a bar tonight, a really nice bar, get maybe 2 beers, go home, say by 11, and get up and go to work the next day. Always, though, I went to the bar. I probably ordered 3 pitchers at last call because I was still there at 3 a.m. I threw up. I didn't go to work. Called in sick, you know, and unfortunately, it never occurred to me that I never did go get those 2 beers and go home at 11. But every time, talk about doing the same thing, expecting different results. Every time I would say, I'm just going to go get a couple beers. And, you know, it's just astounding to me that I lived like that. But I sure did. And, you know, I was a nurse and I loved my job. And that was one thing. I had episodes of being suicidal when I was in college and then when I was a nurse and lived in Miami, Florida. And I'd have episodes that I would want to kill myself, but I would never say, I'd say I'd never do it because of my job and because of my parents. You know, but it was a thought I had a lot. So anyway, one night I went, I said I was going to go have a couple beers and go home at 11 and go to work. And of course I got blasted and did my usual, wrote a bad check. That was back when you could write a bad check. And then you'd cover it the next day by writing another bad check and run it over to the bank. And then the next day you'd write a bad check and run it over. That's before they had telecom and all that stuff. So I was familiar with that activity, too, a lot. But one night I came home and I'm sure God led me to look at my nursing book. And it said that if you're an alcoholic, you probably have personality changes, which that was true because just that night I had said I was going to beat up the hostess at this really nice restaurant. Yeah. Why? I don't know. And, of course, I had on 3-inch heels. And so, anyway, you have personality changes and you have physical problems. I had already developed a ulcer, and it just, everything it said, it sounded like me. And it said it was progressive. And so I called AA, and I didn't know really anybody in AA. I know my aunt was in AA, but she died before I came in, and she didn't live near us, so I didn't know her very well. So I was just lucky I called AA. And they called somebody, and she came pick me up, and we went to a meeting. And a woman was given a lead, and she said her name was Hope, and she said, all I wanted to do was drink like a lady. And I thought, I got you there. You know, that's what I wanted to do too. But of course, I'd usually have mascara down to here and God knows what, you know. But so I went to that meeting and listened to her talk and really could relate to a lot of the things she said. And, of course, they said, you want to go to a meeting tomorrow night? Oh, no, I'm good, thanks. And I know I have to remember this because when people come in now and they're, like, this far from every bad thing that could happen, lose their job, lose their home, lose their life, they go, oh, well, I'm not sure I want to quit drinking. So I wasn't sure I wanted to quit drinking, but it was nice. That whole week, I didn't lie to anybody. I didn't have to call in sick. You know, I felt pretty good. It was great. So I thought, you know, maybe the Friday night came, and maybe I'll just go to a bar and have a couple drinks, you know, and go home. Instead, I went to a meeting first, a 5:30 meeting. I sat down in the leader's chair where they always sat, and of course everybody came in and just sat down, you know. Then when they said, is there anybody here that's new, I didn't hold up my hand. But they talked about one day at a time, and for some reason that hit home, and I didn't go out to the bar, and I haven't had to drink since that time. I listened to Hope give her talk. So that's been an amazing blessing. Thank you for reminding me I need to drink some. So there I was, 29 years old, getting sober, had a good job. You know, I was kind of the Cinderella of sobriety thing. You know, I didn't have kids I had harmed. I didn't have husbands, and you know, that I had harmed. And I had a great job, and that was just great. And I remember when I got to my 1 year anniversary, like just before it, I said, "There's no way I can stay sober one more week." But then I said, no, you know, I just stay sober today. I can't tell you about next week, but I know I'm not going to drink today. And that's like coming here tonight. I knew I wasn't going to drink today because I was going to go give a week. And that's why service is so important. And so all that went on, and I met this great guy, Jim, and we ended up getting married. He was another one of us, and which worked out really well. I mean, that's been nice in our relationship. And although I am 6 months more than him, but it doesn't matter, you know, we're just sober today. We got married, and, you know, life was great. And we had a little boy named Timmy. Well, I still call him Timmy. He's 6'6". He's the intern principal of the largest high school in Utah. But I still call him Timmy. So we had Timmy, and that was just, you know, things couldn't be better. And went to meetings and, you know, felt like I was growing in spirituality and doing the steps and staying sober. And, you know, I really was hook, line, and sinker in the program. So then I was pregnant again, and now it's when I'm going to just tell you all my tools. You know, this is what I've learned, and this is what helped me. I was pregnant, and I was driving home from work, and I'd had a lot of trouble with this pregnancy. And God said to me, it'll be a girl, and everything will be okay. And I was so relieved. And a few weeks later, I had a little boy who only lived a half an hour, and he died. And but, you know, I was very trusting of God and what he said. And I went to a meeting, which was, amazing. I went to a noon meeting, and there was this gal that had eons of sobriety, and I just loved what she said. And before it got to me, I forget what the subject was, but she said, there are no big deals in AA. There are medium deals, and there are small deals, but there are no big deals. And understanding what she was saying and what that meant, not that it wasn't horrendous to lose a baby, but I said, that's right. You know, I was saying to myself, why me, why me, why not me? Mm-hmm. I didn't ask why me when I met a really nice guy, and I didn't say why me when I had a beautiful child, and so why me? Because life is here and it goes on and I'm there, I'm in life. So that helped me so much to just trust God and say, I have no idea what that was all about, but I'm not going to say, well, that was stupid or anything like that. And I just, there was a gal down the street that came down and said, you know, I had a baby, I had a miscarriage, and I cried all the time, and I was so depressed. So anytime you want to come down, and I said, I do not want that, you know. I'll think about it maybe three times. I'll go through the thing. He died, and we buried him, and it was so sad. But I'm not going to, I give myself three times to think it through. And then I'd say, okay, you got to think about something else. And it was no discourteous to Philip, my baby who died, but it was just a matter of not letting that get to me so badly that I wasn't able to do what I was supposed to do. And so that talk about a gift of the program, you know, even though that was a terrible situation, I got through it. And then we had a little girl, and she was okay. So he did know what he was talking about. Who knew? That was great. And I was, I loved my job. I was a nurse in critical care. I usually worked in critical care. And it was so good. And yet I started experiencing a lot of depression. And I really was suicidal. But I didn't tell anybody. Because how unseemly would that be if you had 20 years of sobriety and you were suicidal? I didn't, you know, false pride. I didn't tell anybody. But, you know, I was around death a lot with patients in critical care. And I used to be jealous when they die and think, oh, man, they got out of this, you know. And it was just amazing because I had, on paper, it was a beautiful life, amazing life. And I was involved in everything. And a lot of that was my escape from thinking about myself and thinking about my suicidal thoughts. I was in charge of this at school and did this at school and, you know, all kinds of stuff, which I really enjoyed. But I had never had a moment to think about my thoughts. And that was subliminally designed that way. You know, I didn't realize I was doing that, but that's what I was doing. And it didn't bother me as far as my work or anything like that for quite a few years. And I only told one gal, a gal I rode horses with, that I was jealous of my patients who died. And so depression is a big part of my story. And, you know, I know that if you are depressed, for me, this is what I believe. If you have depression and you're working the program, that doesn't mean you're not working the program right. Means you have depression. And so there's a lot of opinions on that in AA, but that's how it's worked out for me and the way I look at it. But anyway, I was extremely depressed. Finally, at work, a couple times I'd start crying and I'd have to go home. So then it was interfering. And so I went to a psychologist, and she sent me to a psychiatrist, and she was great. And I ended up on, like, over the years, you know, just working with me and how I felt. And I ended up on 3 or 4 antidepressants, and that got me through the day. I didn't have to say I don't want to pick up my feet, you know, I don't want to get out of bed. I was able to function without fighting with myself whether I could do it or not, you know. And luckily, because of AA, I knew what I needed to do, I could do. And, you know, I was a responsible person. I had a lot of people who I loved and loved me, which didn't have anything to do with how depressed I was or not. It's a chemical imbalance for me, and it doesn't matter what's going on. I have depression. And I didn't really talk about it to anybody for a long, long time, like 10 years or more. But I found that when I would bring it up in my lead, sometimes a person who had depression would relate to it. And besides that, it's good for me because it's such a big part of my story that I was able to stay sober and be suicidal and do what I was supposed to do and go to work. And, you know, AA taught me to take my steps, do what I'm supposed to do, you know. So even though I sometimes didn't want to put one foot in front of the other, I did. And, you know, at least I didn't make myself hate myself for things. You know, I didn't screw up stuff because I was depressed, which would have made me very unhappy, you know, more unhappy. I just was able to do my life like I was supposed to, but deep down inside, you know, I just really wanted to die. And my psychiatrist, I finally told her that when famous people commit suicide, I'd always be jealous. And I'd think, are they braver than me, or are they... or am I braver because I'm staying alive? I mean, it was a very big situation. But with the help of medicine and counseling, I got better and I finally quit having a lot of suicidal thoughts, and I also found relief and didn't feel like I was struggling every day to make sure I did the right thing. And I say, God brought me to AA, and AA brought me back to God. And I've been so lucky to have great church experiences, and been able to use that in my growth. You know, I think spiritual growth is like learning any other thing you learn. For me, it was. I remember I went to a meeting when I was just a few months sober, and I said, I can't wait till I have 5 years of sobriety. And there was a guy that was in the Marines, and he said, don't worry about that God stuff, although he used another word. he said, just don't drink, you know. And so spirituality was just a growth thing. And I grew with that a lot. And of course, the big thing in my life was my horses. I had always wanted horses when I was young. And a gift to own horses in my backyard in a barn was, I couldn't believe it. I probably came in every day of my life and said, Jim, thank you so much. I can't believe I have horses in my backyard in my barn. And my daughter, the third word out of her mouth after mommy, daddy, and then she said horse. So she started riding lessons when she was six. So I started riding lessons when I was 43 and ended up with the truck and the trailer and the barn and the horses, and it was like heaven. It's like, this has got to be what heaven is. And we were really lucky. Our kids did well. And then we found out later, though, that all those nights that my daughter slept in the horse trailer because she didn't want to wake us up, she was drunk. So here I am, just a good old alcoholic, and I never recognized it in my daughter, and she tried to kill herself once. She slit her wrist right after she graduated from high school. She had a horrific accident on her horse and almost died. And she did start riding again right away as soon as she could. And I saw nothing wrong with that, because that was her passion. But that didn't make her quit drinking, you know. And she moved to Virginia. And this was very difficult. I started going to Al-Anon because she was such a drunk. And again, I was just blessed to be able to get through that without harming myself or doing things that I shouldn't. It was just a blessing. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous and staying, going to the rooms, listening, hearing other people's problems. She used to call and say, oh, I broke my glasses and I don't have the money to fix them. And I go, oh, man, I'm so sorry to hear that. End of sentence. You know, Al-Anon taught me that. And I knew from hearing other drunks, you know, that I should not send her the money, because I knew she was drinking it up. Well, she's got 10 years of sobriety now, I'm happy to say. And married a guy with 11 years of sobriety. And she's such a blessing. So anyway, horses were a lot of my life, and work was a lot of my life. I mean, I just loved what I did as a nurse. And I know one thing that happened. One day, a tornado hit our house and destroyed it. And the we had three horses then. They were in the barn, thank God. Because it took our truck and trailer and threw it in the neighbor's yard. It imploded or exploded most of the rooms in our house. It had to be completely rebuilt. We were so lucky. We had good insurance. And we honestly went to a hotel that night and slept. Because we knew, with God's help, we were going to be taken care of. And gosh, I know it took at least 4 years to get those boxes unpacked, and we had to go live in an apartment, and they rebuilt our house. But we were so lucky, and all the beautiful things that happened with people helping us and stuff. So that was another thing. Practice not freaking out. You know, if a tornado hits your house, don't freak out. Trust God. You know, that's what we were supposed to do. And that's what we did. So Finally, our son got married and married a gal whose family lived out west. So they moved out west. They live in Utah. And our daughter had moved to Virginia to work on a farm and train horses. And then she got married and started having babies. And I had her horses back home. And so anyway, we knew we were going to move to Virginia. It took about 4 years. I was kind of slowly staging the house with painting neutral colors and all that stuff because we knew we were going to be moving. And we moved out here, and we were so delighted to find all the meetings in Winchester and around here and all the active AAs. We were just delighted. And, there's even a Thursday night men's meeting in Indianapolis, and Jim goes to a Thursday night men's meeting here, and we've just been blessed. I mean, it's great. And we got, if you want to meet people, the best place to meet them is in AA. They're nice, if they need help, you can help them, but you can also make friends with them and really have some good, solid friends. And Abby's husband's family has taken us in and invites us to all the goings on and everything, so we all get along well. His mother is in the program. His father is in the program. His stepfather is in the program. He's in the program. Jim and I are in the program. It's a very nice family gathering. There's no guns and booze, We're just all there. I didn't work again right away. I'd worked at the other hospital for 38 years. I had been nominated for Nurse of the Year 3 times. I mean, I just say that because God gave me the gift to be able to work and help people, and that's just all I wanted to do. And especially since my kids were grown, I wasn't doing two things, I just could work. And I missed working. There was even one of the doctors asked me to work for him, and he said I was the face of credibility at St. Vincent back in Indianapolis. I mean, I just had such a great relationship there, and it was really hard to leave. I knew all the docs, and they knew me, and it was just a great situation. But when I got here, I did apply for some jobs, and I did get a job because I just love to help people. And I have a lot of knowledge from all the nursing I've done and different kinds of nursing. And I was working actually down in Woodstock every day. And I loved it. And I could put in 50 hours a week. It didn't matter because, I didn't have little ones at home. One day, after I had been there about a year and 3 months, my boss came in. It was a Friday afternoon. Said she wanted to talk to me. She took my badge. Head of Human Relations was there. They took my badge, and she walked me to the door. And didn't even let me go back to my office except to get my purse. That was the most shocking thing that has ever happened. Because I had always had such good feedback, and I had always been so passionate about the job. And if somebody had told me that was going to happen, I would have just said they had lost their minds. So besides it being, it hurt. It just hurt to be taken away from the patients. to be taken away from a job that I loved and people I worked with, and talk about your false pride. I mean, it killed my pride, and it just broke my heart. And so here I am, I was 38 years sober then. It happened last October. I was astounded. And she said I was practicing outside my scope of practice. And, I can see where she thought that, but that's the way I had worked for 40 years. By then I'd been a nurse for 40 years. And I still, unfortunately, am baffled by the fact that that required that kind of firing. I mean, that's how they do it these days, but boy, it's so hurtful. And she was mad and her face was red. And she had interviewed me for the job, and she and I had always been close, and she had given me other responsibilities, and this happened. I just drove home stunned. And I tell you, there is where AA saved my life. Because I have the saying, when insight fails me, let discipline save me. And I knew what to do. I went to meetings, I went to church, I talked to my sponsor. I cried, of course, but I didn't freak out, and I did what I knew I was supposed to do. There's been no resolution. I mean, that was the end of it. And she even reported me to the Board of Nursing. That's another, I can't believe it, but that's what happened. I have no control over that. What I have control over is what I do. And I know what God wants me to do. And as my sponsor always says, have you done everything you can do? And also, she says, we don't have all the information. And I know I don't have all the information about that situation because I'm certainly baffled, amazed, disappointed to the most that it ever happened, just shocked. But when insight fails me, let discipline save me. And I have been practicing what I'm supposed to do for 39 years. Go to meetings, help others, and be active in the program, and I thought, well, I had a baby die and we lost our house to a tornado, and I've got a good story. You don't have to drink through those things. I didn't realize how good it would get. You don't have to drink. You really don't. So really, that's about all I have. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad you were here so I could talk and remember what I'm supposed to be doing. And it was beautiful driving down here today, and that's all I have. Thanks.